Welcome to the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Sue Blackwell, and I am this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements listed in the order of service, and be sure to take the order of service home to read them. In addition, there are a few others. We will be packaging cookies tomorrow afternoon, and we could use help. This is for the sale, the cookie sale, the day after Thanksgiving. Please see Yvonne if you can help. And then Barbara has an announcement.
Okay, I think by looking at what people wore, I think most of you got the email that we're going to do a photo of the congregation after the service today. So during the prelude, if everyone would just start walking down here, and we'll do red to purple on the stage, and Bill's going to take photos of that. Everybody who's here, whether you got the email or not, please participate. You're invited. We want you to be here, and we will figure out how to fit you into our rainbow. So don't worry about what you're wearing at all, please. And then one of the concerns was that this takes a long time to organize a large group of people, but I thought the food will encourage us to get done quickly. So after we get done with the picture, we'll move that direction to start going through for the line to the banquet that we have. So thank you, and we'll see you after the service. Yes, I'm sorry, the postlude. If we do it during the prelude, that would be really great. So thank you.
And then stay the queen up, everybody.
Thank you, Barbara. I invite you to greet those around you.
Hello.
Good morning.
If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall for a while after the service. I have a bit of a cold. So if you have any questions about our church, I'd be more than happy to talk to you. Or if you have been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be glad to talk to you about that as well. If you are visiting with your children, today's service is intergenerational. The children will remain in the service and will not go off to our e-classes. Nursery care is available. It's to the right when you exit. And there will be regular RE classes next Sunday, the weekend of Thanksgiving. LCUUC is sponsoring a bag and blanket and a bear this holiday season to benefit children in the foster care system. If you would like to help, please read the announcement about it in the order of service and take a tag off the tree. Also, we are in the midst of the UU Service Committee's Guest at Your Table campaign. If you did not get a box and booklet last week, please pick one up from the table in the foyer and look for info on the order of service. We will be doing a short multicultural holiday pageant on December 9th. If you would like to participate, please see Kristen Sandin or Carrie Duma. Please put your cell phones on silence. And I hope you'll find this morning service interesting. I've heard wonderful things about the service that James did for us last year. James Glasinski has a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Jazz Study from Cardinal Stritch University. He freelances as a jazz bassist in the Milwaukee area and is a member of the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee. He is in his second year at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago and has begun a ministerial internship at Unitarian Church North in Mequon, Wisconsin. James presented a sermon on John Coltrane last year at this church. We also have another guest, Ryan Meisel, who is a composer, arranger, and multi-saxophonist, got his Bachelor's of Music from UW-Madison and his Master's from Northern Illinois University, my father's alma mater, actually. He currently teaches music in the Hartford School District. So, welcome.
We make of our silence a fire of thanksgiving for freedom. We make an offering of quiet gratitude to God for those men and women who in darkness of an age lighted candles, first in their hearts, then in their families, then in the common way, that darkness might not triumph over the spirit of humanity. We light our chalice today to remember the light bearers of life. We remember the moments in our own darkness when the way was lost and we became the sharers of the light brought into our darkness by a neighbor. The printed page, a kindly word gently spoken, a note written in tenderness and love. Please rise in body or spirit and join with me in singing the opening hymn, hymn 154.
Please join me in the congregational ingathering that's printed in your order of service. We seek to bring together all of the fragmentation of our lives, the wide diversities of our interests. We seek meaning for the commonplace, for the ordinary, for the nondescript.
We seek strength to walk the ordinary path, to do the ordinary tasks.
We seek wisdom to live fully, that our minds and our spirits may be filled with quiet tranquility. And now is a story for all ages, so if the youngsters and the young at heart would like to come forward and meet James at the center, it'd be great.
Good morning, everybody. Is that working? Oh, there we go. We got Donald Driver here. Awesome. So today I'm going to be talking a little bit about jazz and improvisation. And I want to, you know, that word improvisation, I think we throw it out there and sometimes we use it right and sometimes we don't use it right. Does anybody have an idea of what the word improvisation means? Over there? Do you make it up as you're doing it? That's a good one. Raise your hand. You're going to say the same exact thing? Right here? Play off another. I like that too. That's very good. Did anyone else like to? I'm looking out. Totally. Anyone can chime in, I guess. Yeah, and I think so playing off one another, that's very important. I like that. And how did you phrase it? Making it up as you go. I think there's a lot of truth to that, of what improvisation exactly is as well. And one of the things in order for Ryan and I to make music together, we have to agree upon a certain amount of things. We have to agree upon how fast we're going to play a tune. We have to agree upon what song we're going to play, what composition. So in a sense, improvisation is not completely making up everything on the spot as we go. There are some things involved. And so that's why I may go... So that is a particular, well, that's a Miles Davis tune, but it's something kind of all jazz musicians know, and I can just play a couple notes, and Ryan knows what it is. And so in a sense, that wasn't improvising. We were playing a composition. So, but let's more or less improvise on the same form. So that was more improvising, actually. And one of the key things, and I like what the gentleman in the red, what you had to say. In a sense, we are playing off each other. And one of the, and I want to go back a second and talk about the form, the structure that we played. I think that's similar to something that in our church life, in congregational life. And what I'm getting at here is Unitarian Universalists have principles. And we have a covenant. And so these are things that we agree upon so that we can play together to make a community together. And I liken our church life, our congregation life, as a big improvisation. We're both individuals. We both have our own way of playing jazz, but for this time, we're going to play off each other, and we're going to listen to each other, and that's, I think, is the essence of improvisation.
Thanks, and this is an intergenerational service, so the kids get to stay with us today. So this is the special time in our service where we share our deepest concerns and our great joys with each other in spiritual community. If you choose to share, please raise your hand, and the usher will bring you the microphone. Tell us your first name, and then briefly tell us the joy or sorrow that you'd like to share. I'll light a candle, and that will represent your joy or concern so that we can hold it in our thoughts and our prayers. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys be multiplied. I'll light our memorial candle to represent the light that we provide to each other in this community in creating a better world.
I'm Karen, and I'd like a candle for my good friend Laura, who has salivary gland cancer and is going to have surgery next week, but in the meantime has gotten pneumonia, and she's a single mom with three teenagers, and she just needs some good thoughts and prayers.
My name is Chris, and 9 years ago today, my beautiful daughter Kaya was born, and she has changed my life in so many great ways. So I just wanted to say happy birthday.
My name is Megan, and I would like to have a candle of concern lit for a very good friend who is facing a very difficult time, an end of a 15-year marriage, and I can't be with her because she's in California, but your prayers would be appreciated.
My name is Chris, a candle of joy for my young friends who are here today, Chris and Michael Gutchenritter, who are starting Three Brothers Farm, a CSA up on CW, so they'll come and talk with us one of these days and tell us all about their farm, that their family farm. So I'm really glad they're here with us today.
We had a busy week this week. First, a candle of concern for Susan's, her aunt's side of the family. Her aunt died this past week, and joy of concern, her father had successful surgery, and he's feeling much, much better. One more concern to share, we had a student at our school who collapsed during her student-led conference, and turns out she has a mass in her brain and is undergoing emergency surgery today, so we think of her.
I wanted to have a candle of joy for our baby 16-year-old and for celebrating Eric's birthday in a couple of days, who is a little bit older than 16. And also a candle to remember my high school counselor who used Washington State's death with dignity law to die following, she had endometrial cancer. But she had a very rich life and a big influence on my life, and it's been interesting to see how much of an influence she had on my classmates' lives, too.
Hi, I'm Sheila. Excuse me. And some of you greeted me this morning with smiles, saying that you saw something on Facebook. And that is that for the first time in 5 years, I've been able to ride a bike, because Carrie Duma found a recumbent three-wheel bike at Bicycle Dock, and he retrofitted it for me. And Karen and I have been out on the Lake Country Trail twice now. She's now talking about the Spartan Elroy Trail. So I think I need a little time to work up to that. And Carrie and I are going out today, so woo-hoo.
I'm Mary, and first a candle of concern. My husband's aunt fell this last week and broke her leg very, very badly and will be in the hospital for some time. And then a candle of joy. Last weekend I got to go to the Youth Con in Rockford and see UU youth from, you know, really all over the region, and it was just such a tremendous joy to see their passion and their love for each other and their support, and it was probably like the biggest grouping of gay and straight youth that I've seen ever, and that was just, it was super cool.
My name is Esther, and is this on? Okay. Please light a candle of sorrow for a friend of ours, from our curling friend. Her name is Allison Bedbarrow, who was a curler for maybe 4 or 5 years and had been struggling with breast cancer for close to 10 and had been in remission for, you know, for a while, and she curled through the hole, through everything. And this was her respite, I guess. But she also was very much involved in Oconomowoc Theater at the high school. So she, anyway, died this week. And so she was only 49 years old, and we're sad for her.
Hello, this is Greg. Adi would like me to mention a new joy in our family. Naturally, when we're so busy and overbooked with everything, it's time to get a new puppy. So we did, and taken the leap of faith together.
I'm Jerry. I have a joy that yesterday about a dozen or so of us carpooled into Growing Power in Milwaukee, and we saw all the innovative techniques that they've developed in there for growing and producing a lot of really good food on a very small area. And I think we might be inspired to try some of those things here at LCUUC.
My name is Christy, a candle of joy for our daughter Anna and all the friends that she has who put her up during Hurricane Sandy and during the 2 weeks she was without power. Thankfully, it's been restored, and luckily for her, she did not have as much disruption as in her life as many other people did, her neighbors and so forth.
I'm Al, a candle of hope for my personal creationism. I'll be brewing 6 different beers over the next 6 weeks.
My name's Lynn. I don't know if there's more candles. A candle of concern for our member, Pat Hoffman, Tammy Wolfgram's mother, who's at Waukesha Memorial. She's been there for over a week, and she would love to have visitors at any time from church. So, and then also another candle. Ultimately, I'm not sure if it's a joy or concern, but it's our son Rich is here from Manhattan, and our daughter lives. That's a joy. No, that's definitely a joy. but our daughter's there too, and they both weathered the Hurricane Sandy together, and they're still helping those without power. That's the concern. There are still those without power.
Hi, I'm Angel, and in the spirit of Greg Sandin's announcement, we had a new cat wander into our life, and I took it in. And anybody who knows us, we've got 3 dogs and 2 cats, and we don't need another one. So my concern is that this cat needs a wonderful home, and it's a wonderful cat, so there's a joy. And, yeah, let me know if you want it.
I'm going to light one more candle because that's all I have left that'll light for the joys and concerns that we keep in our heart. Oh, we have one more. Go ahead.
I have a joy that my friend, me and my brother's friend Joe has been staying over at our house for a while now, so, yeah. Yay.
All right. Thank you.
For the meditation today, I would Ryan and I are shortly going to play a short composition that I composed, and I want to take a few moments of silence before we play, a few moments of meditative silence. But first, I just want to just introduce the song, and maybe this can kind of guide your reflection for the next few moments. And I entitled the piece "Being There." And I wrote it about 10 years ago, and at the time I was reading a lot of this philosopher, Martin Heidegger, and he's German, and he has this phrase called Dasein, which the closest translation is being there. And what he really means by it is human nature, although he'll never say human nature because he says human nature is constantly changing, evolving, and it's free. But he also acknowledges things like that we are beings toward death, that we have problems and joys and sorrows like we just talked about. So I want to take a few moments of silence, and maybe some of those thoughts can bring some reflection, and then Ryan and I'll play. Thank you.
don't know if we can follow that up, but we do we do have a hymn. Please rise as you're willing and able for hymn number 153, Oh, I Woke Up This Morning. Our reading today is The Many Faces of Jazz by Billy Collins. There's the one where you scrunch your features into a look of pained concentration, every riff a new source of agony. And there's the look of existential bemusement, the eyebrows lifted, the chin upheld by a thumb, maybe a swizzle stick oscillating in the free hand. And of course, for ballads, you have the languorous droop, her eyes half closed, lips slightly parted, the head lolling back, flower on a stem, exposing plenty of turtleneck. Then there's the everything but the instrument look on the fellow at the front table, the one poised to mount the bandstand. And the classic crazy man, crazy face, where the fixed grin joins the menacing stare, especially suitable for long drum solos. And let us not overlook the empathic grimace of the listener who has somehow located the body of cold rage dammed up behind the playing and immersed himself deeply in it. As far as my own jazz face goes, and don't tell me you don't have one, it hasn't changed that much since its debut in 1957. It's nothing special, easy enough to spot in a corner of any club on any given night. You know it, the reptilian squint, the lips pursed, jaw clenched tight, and most essential, the whole head furiously, yet almost imperceptibly nodding in total and absolute agreement.
Thank you for the great reading, Laura. It's good morning, and it's great to be back here again. One of the reasons I chose that reading is because it emphasizes the different emotional qualities that's involved with improvised music and jazz. And a lot of us think jazz is just you know, and but actually, to me, that's just a style of jazz. Jazz is bigger than just any one style of swing or what have you. For me, it's the process that is more important. Jazz embraces improvisation as its main element. And in this sermon, I invite you to explore with me why jazz, at least for me and many others, has become synonymous with freedom. And I want to take a look at what improvisation exactly is and the role of improvisation in our lives. To start out, I just want to talk a little bit about the origins of jazz. Of course, it started around the turn of the 20th century in the American South. New Orleans was its real epicenter. And New Orleans was a unique city for many ways. It had a proud and long-standing opera tradition, so there was a lot of classically trained, highly trained musicians. And there was also a cosmopolitan feel about that city. For example, there was an openness that didn't occur in other southern cities. There was a small park called Congo Square, which is now in Louis Armstrong Park. And it was said from many accounts that slaves and free blacks would get there, go there, and improvise African drumming. And many whites came out to listen to this. Another unique thing about New Orleans was there was this sort of, they're called Creoles of color. They're essentially mixtures of black and French. Normally a wealthy Frenchman had a mistress, and sometimes they were African American, and then the offspring were Creoles of color. So many of these different components, and then with the styles of music that were going on at that time, including ragtime, you know, that's think of things like Scott Joplin there, and the blues, and brass bands. These are all the origins of the music. Of course, there was other music, like vaudeville music and spirituals and work songs that were also very important. But the one common denominator I see between all those different styles that were antecedents to jazz was the fact that they were African-American or African in origin. And African music specifically has an emphasis on improvisation. So those early creators and innovators of the music were just two generations removed from slavery, living in Jim Crow segregated American South. They were predominantly black and Creoles of color, like I said. So it is out of the ashes of systematic slavery and oppression that jazz arises. The theologian and scholar James Cone, in his book The Spirituals and the Blues, says it best. Whatever form black music takes, it is always an expression of black life in America and what the people must do to survive with a measure of dignity in a society which seems bent on destroying their right to be human beings. If African Americans are repeatedly told, as they were at that time, that they are less than human, that they are pieces of property, that they have no say over their future or their children or input in choosing partners and friends, outlets have to be created to combat that oppression and to restore dignity to what it means to be a human being. One such outlet, I think, at that time was the black church. Another important and non-theistic humanistic one was jazz. So if this is all true, that jazz comes predominantly from African Americans and it comes out of a struggle for freedom, I have to ask myself, why would I, a white boy from the south side of Milwaukee, be so in love with jazz? The fact is, jazz is not very popular anymore, and it was not part of my blue-collar upbringing. And to play jazz and understand it, there's a lot of training involved. There's a lot of multicultural understandings. So I have to ask myself, why did I do this? And the answer is because at times in my life, I felt oppressed. I went to a very small conservative Lutheran grade school where many of my fellow students came from the upper middle class suburbs, and while my family, like I mentioned, was very working class. It was there I was taught to take the Bible very literally, compartmentalize my mind, and to a certain extent this enslaved me. I was not encouraged, nor was I allowed to think freely, and perhaps some of you have had similar experiences. As I thought my way out of this intellectual and religious dead end, I heard jazz. Its improvisatory nature represented an expression of freedom for me. Of course, I'll never know what it means to not have physical freedom or to be discriminated against for the color of my skin. However, I feel an emotional connection to the music and culture that created music, created the jazz music, an oppressed group of people that was able to transcend what was dealt to them, even if it was just transitory, even if it was just for a moment on a Saturday night. Hardship and oppression are universal experiences and know no color boundary. One way jazz specifically combats dehumanization and oppression is by exalting the individual musician. This is restoring an importance to freedom of expression. An improvising musician may spend hours and hours listening to recordings. They go back in the history of jazz and find recordings. Ryan may look at Lester Young recordings and try to analyze what he's doing. What is he doing on his improvisations? And it's similar to like how a painter may look at a master painter and copy exactly what they're doing. And ultimately, it's the jazz musician's job to synthesize what they have learned from the recordings, from teachers, and what they have invented and composed themselves to come up with a unique sound. That's why if you're a fan of jazz, you can hear Sonny Rollins play a couple notes on saxophone, you know right away it's Sonny Rollins. Or if it's John Coltrane, you know right away that, oh, that's John Coltrane. Oh, that's Miles Davis. Jazz is truly the soloist art form. Not only there are many different schools of thought on how to improvise, there are seemingly limitless routes to take while improvising to express who you are. Though a musician may play a song 1,000 times, they're going to play it a little bit different each time. In addition, I think jazz provides an analogy for how individuals work together in community. When playing jazz, listening is so vital to making of the music, to make it swing and to have its being. In fact, if a musician is not listening to the other people in the group, it's almost as if that non-listener drags the rest of the group down. This active sort of listening while you are playing takes some technical mastery of your instrument, so your brain and fingers can play on autopilot, so to speak. You can get past the muscle memory, and you can actually play what you want to play that's coming from within. So as a jazz musician, as a bass player, if I'm playing with a drummer, every drummer is going to have a slightly different way to play the beat, and I may change the way I play just slightly to match up with what the drummer's doing. But when we accompany someone and it's that person's turn to solo, we are very conscious of the soloist. We are listening to the soloist, listening to where the soloist may take us rhythmically, where they may take us emotionally, and try to follow. But overall, the entire group is the important thing, soloist included. The group is the most important thing. All are secondary to the greater groove of the music. So, just to summarize here, and I think there's three types of listening in jazz, I think. There's listening to the jazz of the past, so you can form who you are. There's listening to the jazz that's around you when you're performing. And as I previously mentioned, there's a jazz inside that you're listening to, too. This kind of inner music that you're trying to pull out when you're performing. And as I mentioned in the story for all ages before, I think this is an awesome analogy for congregational life. Three types of listening. Jazz did not invent improvisation in the Western world. In fact, it's more accurate to say that jazz resurrected improvisation. In the past, the greatest musicians were also awesome composers. Bach, Mozart, they could all improvise on the keyboard. Unfortunately, many of their improvisations were lost to time because they didn't write them down. It's only when they actually wrote them down that we can keep them. Fortunately for jazz, it came to be around the time of recorded music. So people could listen to different people's improvisations and build on that. I want to talk a little bit about the word improvisation itself. And this may need some demystification of sorts. Improvisation is creating musical patterns and musical logic on the spot. Improvisation uses intuitive logic, or feeling and reason together. Jazz isn't all feeling, and it's not just dry technical reason either. Actually, all of us improvise every day when we speak. When we have a conversation with a good friend, we don't talk in a memorized way. We don't act out what we're going to talk. We can intuitively, from our depths, speak out what we want to say. And that is unless we are learning a new language, which I tried studying German, and you can't always improvise in German. You have to memorize it first. So we spontaneously create coherent sentences and statements on the spot founded on the logic of our past experiences. We speak that way because we've heard speech so often. We've studied grammar. We've studied the rules of language. We read and we write. Similarly, musical improvisers, in a sense, recall musical rules. They recall musical patterns, musical logic, and recall memories of music. And we laud those who can speak well with no ums and who can communicate off the cuff. And one of the greatest speeches in American history, Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, is a perfect example. Martin Luther King started out his reading with a prepared speech. He sounded kind of professorial and kind of intellectual, and he was talking about this blank check. But midway through, with the encouragement from the gospel singer Mahalia Jackson, he abandoned the prepared text and began improvising on his dream theme. And in effect, isn't that the part we all remember? We don't remember the first few sentences and paragraphs he said it. We remember the "I have a dream" part. As a preacher and orator, he had improvising in his bones. Dr. King used a rhetorical device as well as a musical device, and this is often recalled in jazz is called riffing. Riffing is a musical or spoken phrase that drives the point home, repeats, and builds an intensity. Good riffs are always compact, meaningful, well-balanced, and catchy. They can show us how to get the point across. And I think that's what Martin Luther King did in his speech. So similar to Martin Luther King, to how he improvised within the context of a written speech, jazz musicians normally improvise within song forms. These songs are normally compositions with specific melodies and chord progressions written by a composer. So as I alluded to before, a jazz musician knows hundreds of songs, and that's why I can travel to Berlin, I can travel to Paris, and I can just sit in a jazz club and play with musicians I've never played with before. Form gives the means to participate in community in a meaningful way. I want to say that again. Form gives the means to participate in community in a meaningful way. And of course, I'm alluding here to congregational life as well. We need forms, we need principles, we need covenants to come together in a meaningful way. The static composition, while important as a foundation, is essentially secondary to the improvised performance. So the most important part in jazz is the improvisation. The composition, the little song that we improvise around, yeah, it's important, we need it. But the most important part is the improvised part. And this is so different than Western classical music, where the most important part is the composed part. A composer might brood over a small couple phrases of music for months to try and get it perfect. And in essence, jazz says, no, well, we're going to improvise and compose on the spot, and jazz is going to become an imperfect art, essentially. But I think that is just more representative of the human condition. We are imperfect. Jazz, as in life, there are unintended mistakes, but those unintended mistakes can come and turn into something good if you can learn how to rebound quickly and learn how to listen quickly. So improvising does not mean that we do not have a plan or have not thought about the future. Improvising means we have flexibility and we're open to our environment. We have to react when life takes its course. And I think Unitarian Universalists embrace improvisation as well. I think if you study the theology and the history of Unitarian Universalism, you see an evolution. You see change. You see people listening to each other and then changing and moving together. Improvisation is also reflected in our commitment to democratic principles and how we govern ourselves. Unitarian Universalism and jazz both utilize collective decision-making, listening, and trust in the group. Part of improvising is being present in the moment. And it's hard if your mind is cluttered and stressed and you have a million things going on. Or for myself, sometimes when I'm performing, I sometimes have this voice in my head that's saying, your ideas, they're not that hip. You can't really play this music. What I've learned to do as a jazz musician and as a Unitarian Universalist is, you know, put those voices aside. A study examined the brain activity of jazz musicians as they improvised and had a very similar conclusion. The musicians, you know, they were put in these fMRI machines to look at their brain where the blood is flowing, and they were in there and they were able to play their keyboards and stuff, so they were able to look at their brain while this was happening. And the conclusion was that the musicians exhibited a deactivation of the brain area associated with planned action and self-control. This allowed the musicians to create without worry about what they were creating. So if we are not worrying and second-guessing, our improvisatory part of our brain can take over. The fMRI machine also recorded a spike in activity in the part of the brain linked with self-expression. It lights up, for instance, whenever people tell a story in which they are the main character. Scientists argue that this part of the brain is required for jazz because the musicians are channeling their artistic identity, searching for the notes that best summarize their style. And this is so true in the history of jazz. You may hear people say, if someone's soloing, you may hear people actually say, tell me your story, tell me your story. They're encouraging to express yourselves through the music. What we can learn from improvising, in my opinion, is applicable not only to art and music, but to relationships, to our spirituality, to the democratic process, and to all creative human endeavors, including church life. Improvisation is the blending of our technical reason with the expressive, intuitive parts of our mind. To be in the moment and truly express ourselves, take turning off that part of the brain that edits and inhibits so we can truly express our unique selves. We usually have daily schedules and big plans for our lives, but at the same time, we have to adapt and change with the circumstance. Thinking like an improvising jazz musician may be the best remedy to cope with the unexpected problems we face in life. Amen, blessed be.
So now is the time. We're running a bit late. We'll take just a short time for a polylog. If you'd like to raise your hand if you have a comment on today's sermon or something to share, raise your hand, and the usher will bring you a microphone.
Thank you for your sermon. I'm Anna, and I'm an art teacher, and I was thinking about this month, our artist of the month is Matisse. So I was thinking about my kids, and Matisse did a series called Jazz where it's like just collages, and I was having trouble getting these collages out of the kids, like what they were going to do. And as I was listening to you, I thought, I could ask them, like, if they've written any stories, like, to get there. Because I told them to make a collage that tells a story, but I think maybe they have to get it out a little bit more. But I was just thinking about how improvisation happens in art and how Matisse was a good example of that.
Ah, everybody's hungry. Actually, I had a comment. I really enjoyed the sermon today because it really correlates with the type of work that I do, which is an energy worker. And it's using both sides of your brain, which is what you do. And it's so important to have the technical skills and to use that left side of your brain where you have the knowledge and the experience. But it's so important for us to use the right side of our brains and to marry the two together. And that's where the true improv comes in. That's where spirit works through us and moves through us, and we create and we channel. And when people come together and they're all working from that same space, you know, they're all coming together as instruments, and they've perfected their instruments as human beings as much as they possibly can. And when you draw people like that together and people are working together for a common cause, that's when you just really create something beautiful, and people bounce off each other and they play off the best of each other. And the reason they can do that is because they've left their guard down. They're not working from their ego, and they're not working from, they're creating together rather than being an individual. And that's how we create, and that's how we heal, is being together. So anyway, my little sermon for today. Thank you. We have our offertory comes up next, and we have a special collection today for Safe Passage. And Safe Passage is a school that empowers the poorest at-risk families who live in a garbage dump in Guatemala City. Safe Passage creates opportunities and fosters dignity through the power of education. And in particular, LCUUC is sponsoring Vilma, a 25-year-old mother of two children in the adult literacy program. So loose checks, or undesignated checks, and loose cash will go to this cause. Thank you. Please join me in the congregational affirmation. It's printed in your order of service, and we can read it together. May our time together renew our hope. May the stories we share refresh our courage. May the songs we sing lift our spirits. May the words we speak invigorate us. May the touch of hands, the sound of laughter, the sight of faces new and familiar, restore us in faith. Amen. And please rise as you're able to closing hymn number 309, Earth is Our Homeland.
Our homeland, the song of stars of grace.
Our moment-to-moment experience is improvisational, even though it exists within a structure or plan. That is, life brings us opportunities, questions, and problems to solve, and we respond in real time, trying to make sense out of each challenge or offer. How we live our lives within the structure of our day is an eternal improvisation.
Thank you. Thank you.